Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
2068, Mars, suicide bombers, and of course, the drumbeat transition. It can only be another Resonance Rewind. So, the finger is on the trigger. That is the message that's come across. And already in the studio, we have a collection of Resonance Rewinders ready to analyze the first episode of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons from, of course, 1967-68, of course. They started shooting in 67 and it released to the world. Gerry Anderson series. We also welcome to Resonance Rewind, in no particular order, Rebecca Bond from Norwich. How are you, Rebecca?
Hello, very well, thank you.
Excellent. From the joys of Norway, Jenny Bill. How are you, Jenny?
Fine, thank you. Good evening.
Marvellous. From the joys of North Carolina, where hopefully all is well with the world and she's sorted out all manner of internet challenges and Zoom challenges and so on, Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I'm doing pretty fantastic. It's the first day we've had in months that feels like spring, so I am very happy.
This is what we like to see. Spring, resurrection, rebirth. You can't put them down. It's a Christian metaphor, which we'll come towards the series in a few moments. And of course, hopefully, with microphone in full functioning order, we welcome Eloise Sheehan from somewhere in the south of England. How are you, Eloise? I think she's still having challenges with her microphone there. So Eloise will obviously have to lip read our particular packages on that side of things. We'll work our way through that. Nevertheless, Robin Pierce is, of course, with us with microphone in full force as well. How are you, Robin?
Oh, absolutely. Loud and proud. Thank you.
Marvellous. Okay. Well, it may well be that we'll just have a silent partner in this particular episode. Don't worry, Eloise. Maybe try logging out and logging back in again. I think she's actually doing that. So that's an important thing. Robin, would you like to do your initial précis of this much darker incarnation of Super Marionation with, as I said, suicide bombers and indeed a classic case of if your name is Captain Brown, you're always going to get the dodgy end of the stick.
Okay, you took away my best joke there, but it's 2068 in this 1967 follow-up to Thunderbirds. As you say, Gerry Anderson took a much darker tone with this one, and in my opinion, it's the darkest children's show ever produced. We'll go into that later on. But as I say, it's 2068. World Security is the remit of the Spectrum organization, who operate from a flying base, not unlike those we've seen in the Marvel movies, at the disposal of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we have received signals from Mars, so we investigate those in the Zero-X, which we first saw in the Thunderbirds Argo film. But a colossal misunderstanding leads the expedition to believe that they are actually going to be under attack from the Martians. So launching a preemptive attack, never a good way to go here, kids. They destroy the Martian city, or do they? The Martians, well, in this case called the Mistrons, can actually regenerate matter, and they regenerate their city. They wage war on Earth in a sort of stealthy kind of way, not obliterating us. They want it to be a slow, agonizing torture. And Spectrum is on full alert. Now, the Martians, Mistrons, do actually have the good grace to warn us every week of what they're going to do. by means of a very deep voice. They can reconstruct human beings. We see that they're around by the sudden appearance of two circles, two light circles floating around. They resurrect human beings at will. They do this with our hero, Captain Scarlet of Spectrum. They're going to use him and Captain Brown, because they've all got color-coded names, to assassinate the world president, even in a maximum security building, helpfully labeled maximum security building on the outside. Makes one wonder if there's a minimal security building. But all doesn't go quite the way they want, because Captain Scarlet, through means that we'll explain later, becomes indestructible. And therein comes the darkness.
Hold fire on that side of things. Yes, thank you, Robin. I won't rise to that particular bait. But I will actually say that maybe it has something to do with the fact that when Gerry Anderson went in to see Lou Grade on the success of Thunderbirds and 32 shows there, they thought, great, we're going to commission more Thunderbirds. And they said, no, we're going to cancel the series. We haven't been able to sell Thunderbirds in America, so we want to make something completely different. Let's find out what Jessica Burtis made of her first episode of Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons on a day, Jessica, when, let's be honest, you know, we're also celebrating the fact that Perseverance is actually on Mars, probably looking around for those pesky Mysterons as we speak.
Yes, I don't think we'll be attacking them, so thankfully we should avoid the threat to our world leader, whoever it may be, but I really enjoyed it. I actually ended up watching the second episode as well. I love the tiny little sets as well. I thought it was so cute. I think I enjoyed that even more than the plot, actually. This week I actually had to read Blood Child by Octavia Butler for class, so the whole idea of like host aliens has been freaking me out, so this is like a cute way to kind of get over that.
Absolutely. And again, that sort of notion of really at the end of the episode, we kind of think Scarlet has actually come back, but then, you know, is he on our side? As you say, the second episode, I was very tempted to actually say you need to watch both episodes to kind of get a flavor of the series, but you obviously went ahead and caught that. And of course, the shock of when he actually crashes into that airplane or aircraft plane, a whole range of other factors there. You know, suicide for you, maybe, as he says. Let's turn to Rebecca Bond, who I believe, Rebecca, probably your first experience of Gerry Anderson, let alone Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
It was indeed. I'm really glad that Robin mentioned Thunderbirds, because that was the first thing that I associated it with. Is it linked to Thunderbirds then, Robin? Am I correct?
Well, only that they're both set in the 21st century. And that's about it.
Right. Because that's what it did remind me. That was the first thing that came to my head when I watched it. I did enjoy it. It was nice to look at a more animated, you know, style of sci-fi program. I've seen parts of Thunderbirds, but never watched it. I enjoyed it. I agree. I love the little sets as well. I love the particularly lifeless expressions of most of the characters. I thought that was really entertaining. I think the plot was quite morbid, though. The fact you mentioned it's a kids show, I just assumed that, you know, kids wouldn't be watching it, but I suppose they would, wouldn't they? That is quite a dark plot for children to be watching. But I enjoyed it.
Well, indeed, Rebecca, there had to be warnings put out on television regularly to actually point out that Captain Scarlet is indestructible. You are not. Do not try to emulate him. And certainly those final sequences by Ron Embleton at the end of the show, Artist for TV21, which showed all kinds of manner of perils that Paul Metcalf was actually put into place. Okay, well, let's turn to our own particular Destiny Angel, of course, wearing scarlet hair, obviously to celebrate the whole system, in Norway, Jenny Bill. You were quite excited when I flagged this up as being our session last week. So did it actually match your memories? Is it a case of, yes, this is where Ed Bishop came of age? The character of Commander Straker was founded very much on his incarnation and lifeless expression of Adam Svensson, otherwise known as Captain Blue.
Yes, Captain Blue was my childhood crush. I absolutely love Captain Scarlet. I loved it when I was a child. And the sad thing about this episode is it actually doesn't have the Mysteron rings in it. This episode doesn't, we didn't see them, which for me, you know, one of the highlights of every episode. And as a 7-year-old or however old I was when I saw it, was really super scary. I found the series very scary, but at the same time, I loved it. I loved the angels. I always wanted to be one of the angels. I bought the Airfix model kit, and I have an angel aircraft at home hanging from the ceiling. And yes, I do like Ed Bishop. This was actually, this brought him, I know that this was what brought him to fame. That's how he managed to get on the road to being an actor, by pure chance. And yes, I was, had a crush on Captain Blue, and I had a crush on the angels. And I liked these puppets, that they were more lifelike than the earlier puppets, although I do know that they had some problems with the facial expressions because the faces were smaller, and also with moving them around the set, because apparently these ones didn't move around as well as the original models because they were in proportion, and that didn't work for moving the models around. But I preferred them, which is why when you see them filmed, I think they're mainly either on travelators or they're, it's like a
lots
head and shoulders.
Moving walkways, lots of ways forward, lots of ways of actually identifying that if you're going through a metal detector and you've got a metal cigarette case, you should throw those cigarettes away, which is a good metaphor in any case. Just throw those cigarettes away, Captain Brown. You start smoking on something completely different afterwards. And let's see what would have happened on that sort of system.
And the other thing that's missing, which I absolutely loved, was that at the end, later on, they had the vocals in the song, which isn't in the early ones. No,
that took time before we actually find out that they smash him, but they know he'll return. They crash him and his body.
I loved that song. I could sing it now, but I won't.
No, please. We'll step away from that. We've got enough wonderful music by Barry Gray without necessarily having the musical renditions of Jenny working through that. Although, interestingly enough, perhaps we both needed therapy at a time, because clearly, just as you had a relationship or thing for Adam Svensson or Captain Blue, likewise for Rhapsody Angel, until I realised that clearly a relationship with a 6-inch puppet was never going to work. End of. Same with Atlanta Shore, but that's my own issue. Let's see if possibly... the magic has actually worked, and as the joys of various other things occur, we've been able to hear from Eloise Sheehan. Eloise, would you like to speak, and let's see if we can hear you? Sadly, we can't. So tragically, for whatever reason there, she might have to just write down her score. That's all I can say. Stay with the show, and then you can write down the show and hold that up to camera, plus any other comments that you make, which is, strangely, I suppose, a wonderful way of using the web, that we can actually have people actually in silent mode just holding up the score and so on, which is great. Okay, let's talk about characters and so on. Jessica, did you have any particular favourite characters? I mean, one of the aspects about this, of course, was you had an incarnation of Pussy Galore's Flying Circus with the angels. Those people who are fans of James Bond will have seen the kind of direct relevance towards that. You had five crack fighter pilots who are obviously working through that process as well. We had, of course, a multiracial cast with Seymour Griffiths, the alter ego of Lieutenant Green, played by Cy Grant, who was the communications officer, analogous perhaps to Nichelle Nichols in Star Trek as Lieutenant Uhura, and so on. And of course, we had a character who was supposed to be much more popular than Captain Blue in the early days, Captain Gray, who effectively faded to gray after about the 10th or 11th episode on the whole thing. But apart from that, Jessica, and of course, let's not forget the world precedent, which in the original script that Jerry Addison had written had said that he'd hoped that the world precedent was due to be played by Patrick McGoohan, somebody who'll crop up later on in the whole sort of sequence. But anyway, Jessica, any thoughts from yourself?
I did like the angels. I can definitely see how, Jenny, you say that you would have wanted to be like them when you were younger. They were just very cool. I loved all of the shots. I loved their little sunglasses. I thought they were so cool. But I did like the world president. He was just funny with his, like, he was so calm, even though he was in, like, the utmost danger, you know? I'm like, this guy just doesn't care. He's just done. He's funny.
If we're looking for a president of the world, we'd much rather have that sort of person than Boris Johnson, let's be honest. But anyway, that's another line entirely. Or was it Tony Blair who wanted to be president of Europe? I don't know. Rebecca, as you said, dark issues, problems from that point of view, and in many ways a foreshadowing of what in the late 20th century became par for the course in terms of people strapping up with explosives and exploding themselves and becoming a suicide bomber and so on. And clearly this war of nerves that we found emerges out of a misunderstanding, let's face it, it's a classic case of shoot first, ask questions later, were those kind of issues which you think still have a relevance today, or is it a case of, well, maybe not? I mean, Captain Scarlet has been remade as a series at the start of the century. It was one of the last series Gerry Anderson looked after without super marionation, but with animation. But any thoughts on those sort of messages that come through?
Definitely. I think they're very important, quite deep messages that have been put into, you know, what I assumed would be a lighthearted, you know, kind of animated fun series. And I actually found myself thinking, you know, these are quite deep issues. And as you say, the attack on, you know, other, you know, life forms, for example, that kind of has, I suppose, resonance with, you know, us as human beings. There's a lot of judgment towards other people on some people's behalf, let's say. And I think that does reflect that in a much more extreme and, you know, fictionalized way. But yeah, I do think it's a prevalent issue. I think issues like that should be put into shows. I just think the explosions and, as you say, the suicide bomber thing, very taken aback by the, you know, action of that. But the explosions, I must say, were so realistic. And I'm not quite sure how they actually did it. Does anyone know how that happened? Because
I think it falls under the magical auspices of the late, great Derek Meddings, and the fact that he and his team also went on to work for the James Bond movies, for Superman, okay, for lots of other series. They really actually, I mean, one of the things Gerry Anderson was famous for, amongst being a kind of British Walt Disney, was very much not only his creativity, together with Sylvie Anderson, who I think should be credited for providing an awful lot of the characterizations for this series, his wife at the time, but it was in terms of that special effects thing. And I think it's fair to say, Robin, that from your own perspective, explosions and indeed those models, I mean, the Spectrum pursuit vehicle, actually driving it backwards. Why did they drive it backwards? Because actually there was a plan at the time that it was safer if you traveled by air to actually be seated back to travel, with your back to travel, so that you wouldn't be forced forward in the event of a crash and so on. But Robin, any thoughts?
Well, absolutely. Well, to address Rebecca's question, they would film the miniatures at a higher speed, so when they played the explosion back, it showed up slower and gave it a bigger sense of scale. That's basically,
wow,
what that was.
That's really clever.
I think this is, I love Thunderbirds. I was about 6 when that was shown. I was about 7 or 8 when this was shown. But this has got to be the better series because, again, going back to what Jenny said, the marionettes themselves were more to a proportion. Before this, we'd all seen them with larger heads that were out of proportion with the body because they needed to put the solenoid in a head to do the lip sync on the mouths. So they'd got them all far better proportioned by this. And of course, it's the overall darkness as well. I mean, a secret organization with a base up in the clouds, that's pure Gerry Anderson. But when you think about it, which other TV series can we think of where the hero is killed horribly episode after episode after episode? And in this episode alone, we see him killed in a car crash. We see a reanimated corpse come back as a walking bomb. And let's not forget, we actually see him blow up. It wasn't his body starts to smoke and then we cut to another room and hear the explosion. We see that guy blow to bits. And then the camera, and I was amazed at this, follows Captain Scarlet practically all the way down from the top of the multi-story car park to the ground. You know, thankfully we're spared the splatter, but there's no doubt in our minds of what happened to him. You know, the opening sequence where we're walking down an alleyway, Captain Scarlet is there suddenly in a spotlight. We try to shoot him because it's a point of view shot, and he calmly raises his gun and shoots us about 4 or 5 times in cold blood. This was nothing like the kind of heroes that we tended to see up at that time, which were basically, you know, Scott Tracy coordinating a rescue, Adam West coming to the rescue as Batman. They were all clear-cut good guys. This is not that kind of series. It's remarkable also for its vehicle design, including what Alex said about the Spectrum pursuit vehicle, where it was basically a tank, where you drove backwards and you looked at a TV screen, which gave you, you know, the view of where you were going. It all of it is just absolutely fantastic. Like, we haven't even mentioned the Angels yet. I mean, if people are saying, you know, oh, we didn't have strong female roles in series before Jodie Whittaker, look at the Angels. They are crack fighter pilots, for goodness sakes, and they're expert shots and everything that they do. This was so far ahead of its time.
Juliette Pontoin, of course, the real name of Destiny Angel, who actually orders Rhapsody Angel, effectively, actually our alter ego being Diane Sims, our code word, etc. And something which I still find actually a little bit interesting, insofar as that decision to send off Rhapsody Angel two routes to the Carview, or one route will send you to directly to the Carview, the other one to London. Let's just completely destroy an aqueduct. I mean, unfortunately, not a great deal of traffic on the roads, possibly because there's some sort of lockdown occurring in 2068. But nevertheless, in terms of that, you would have thought if you were driving there, that's a fairly aggressive line to take, to literally just completely destroy an overhead pass on a motorway just to actually change the route of Captain Scarlet, the Mr. Nice Captain Scarlet, and the world president. So certainly there's a militaristic element
here. Is it, though? This is the question, because only last year in America, we saw riot police manhandling the public just so that the president could have a photo op with a Bible, which somehow didn't spontaneously combust in his hand outside a church that he never even went to. So is basically blasting a road to save the world president really that far-fetched?
And the fact that Colonel White, otherwise known as Charles Grey, has been born now. 2 years ago, apparently, born. The rest of the cast haven't been born as yet, but there we are. Let's not confuse the diegesis, the imagined worlds, with the actual reality. Jessica, I want to talk about a little bit of the religious metaphors that I think are actually there, possibly unintentionally, but when you actually think about it, as we are in the season of Lent, approaching Easter, etc., you've got Scarlet, the Blood, the miraculous resurrection on the side of good. You've got Captain Black clearly resurrected in terms of the grave, the funeral, the agent of the Mistrons. You've got misunderstandings. You've got all colours of the spectrum. And then obviously Colonel White as the almost godlike figure at the centre of the whole sort of organisation, cloud base in the skies, etc. I mean, surely this is almost a Christian-oriented publicist's dream, isn't it, in many ways?
No, I don't think I had seen it from like a religious angle. I think a lot of shows do incorporate certain like philosophical things, whether they realize it or not. I think especially just from like it being innately in the culture. But I could see that with like the angels, especially kind of how they're always like this force that's kind of watching over and protecting and kind of safeguarding. You know, they're like guardians watching over all of the little people running around. And with like the ethereal Mysterons, I think that they can kind of be some otherworldly force that, well, literally, that, you know, can be a metaphor for something that's not quite earthly and is, I don't know, outside of humans, and makes commentary on like the human race, like Rebecca was saying, with how we kind of treat one another. So I definitely see that.
And constantly that line about the war of nerves, which the series develops and addresses, that it actually plays on our fears, that actually when they start going through processes, there's an episode later on, I think it's called Heart of New York, where effectively we see the Mistrons just not really impacting, just allowing humanity to destroy itself, really, or to live down to our lowest whims and so on. Jenny, you always like the music. Barry Gray, again, I think very much on form with some very dynamic things here, including, as I say, that drum beat transition, which was parodied mercilessly by Chris Evans, amongst others, with the dun 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 cutaway. What are your thoughts on the sort of overall line? Did you think it kind of managed to address the energy and the urgency of this 25 minute episode?
did. I actually, when I watched it today, the drum beat, I was amazed how many times we saw it. And obviously they have it when they cut to adverts or anything like that as well. Which we didn't have in a video, but in the old days when I was young and it would cut to adverts. But overall, I thought the music was dramatic, but it suited, you know, it was quite dramatic and not military, but kind of quite strong. Mm-hmm. But it suited the tone of the programme, because although it was meant to be a children's programme, it's not really, if you told somebody what it was about, they'd never imagine in a million years that it was a children's program, because it had all those dark themes and all the things happening that we've already talked about. Two things that interest me would be whether they would get away with making that today, and two is when they made it, I mean, I've always seen the sort of religious overtones. Did they actually deliberately do that, or was it just that happened to happen by chance? Was that sort of something that was, they didn't realise that they'd done it?
I think it was probably by chance. I think it's something we kind of read into it. But again, I think once you actually start reading it in that perspective, suddenly you think, well, yeah, hello. It's almost a Christ-like metaphor, really, in terms of the fall from grace. You know, quite literally, you have the fall. You have the fall of man at the end, the fall of Captain Scarlet from the Carview Tower and so on.
Particularly calling the angels was almost like a little nudge to make people think, oh, hang on a minute.
Well, certainly, as I said, had they actually used Pussy Galore's Flying Circus, which Ian Fleming used in Goldfinger, probably wouldn't have been the same. Although it's fair to say that Honor Blackman's character there in the movie Goldfinger was probably, again, a kind of template for what we see in terms of Destiny, Symphony, Rhapsody, Harmony and Melody. And, of course, the multinational approach that they are as well from that point of view. Moving on, I mean, again, I was very tempted to actually say we should, and we will somewhere down the series, look at the animated version, the remake that I think pleased Gerry Anderson a lot more, because he felt he didn't have to worry about strings. He didn't have to worry about all that sort of things. He could get much more into the detail of the system. And they change a few things. Cloud base becomes sky base. Lieutenant Green is changes gender. There are a number of other sort of key areas within that, or at least a character changes gender and so on. Rebecca, overall, looking at the piece itself, did it, like Jessica, tempt you to actually say, well, 32 shows in the series, a few more weeks before we go back to a face-to-face meeting at the University of Lincoln, I think I'll fit them all in there.
Do you know what? It actually did. I think it had some really interesting themes in there that I'd quite like to explore a bit more. If they can put that in the first episode, I'd love to see what the rest has to offer. So I would definitely explore that a bit more. I also just think it's interesting to watch something that I wouldn't usually watch, because, you know, you don't experience that kind of, I keep calling it animated, but I feel like that's misleading, you know, the puppet kind of acting, let's call it.
Super marionated.
You don't really experience that much. Yeah, we'll call it that. But you don't really experience that much nowadays. It's always, you know, actors or animation. It's one or the other. So for it to be different in that way as well, I think I definitely will be watching more, yeah.
You see, Robin, in many ways there, Rebecca's kind of just written the theme of this programme, the rationale, the kind of the pitch that we'd actually put forward to Lou Grade if he was going to actually fund the whole thing, if he were still alive, of course, you know, allowing people to explore things they haven't encountered before and see how they resonate. Over to you, Robin.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we haven't covered yet is the superb villainy we have here. We have Captain Black, who orders the attack on the Mysteron City from the tractor part of the Zero-X on Mars. Now, I've got to admit, I don't necessarily agree with his let's do it to them before they do it to us reaction. But in all
fairness... It's so American, let's face it. Sorry, Jessica.
In all fairness... The scanners that the Mysterons were pointing towards the expedition did look an awful lot like guns to me. One thing I'm not quite certain on is, now, was Captain Black killed and resurrected, or was he just under the mind control? I mean, is he as indestructible as Captain Scarlet? I've never actually been completely certain on that, and I don't know, maybe you or Jenny can help me on this.
Well, primarily, you have to see the animated new adventures of Captain Scarlet to find the answer out to that, because it is all solved there, and solved very satisfactorily.
But also, but we had in later episodes when they did the cast, we had Captain Black, of course, when his card came up, he was standing in a graveyard. How cool.
Again, something which is also addressed very well in the animated thing, but we're not here to look ahead to that. Let's briefly talk about something. We've talked about Ed Bishop. Let's talk about some of the other characters who were actually involved with the process, including, of course, Francis Matthews, who actually, I believe, modelled his incarnation of Captain Scarlet on Cary Grant in terms of the clipped approaches to language that he was actually taking to ensure that people were actually there. Effective, Jenny? And did you think that British approach sort of worked well? And again, the kind of British-American special relationship here between, of course, Captain Scarlet and Captain Blue?
Yes, actually, I believe that Francis Matthews, when he did the audition, he used that style for the audition, and he didn't particularly like it, but because the Andersons liked it, yes. They all liked it, and they so he had to keep that style for the rest of the whole series. So that which was why he actually ended up with that style.
And of course, we also had Charles, or rather Donald Gray, I would say, as the voice of Colonel White and the voice of the Mistrons. Except for the voice of the Mistrons, it was his voice slowed down. Which again shows that sort of incarnation of two things sort of operating to once. Okay, we could also mention some of the other sort of fine actors who were actually there. Liz, of course, who is there as the voice of the Angels, and lots of other sort of characters that were actually within that. I'll find out her surname before we wrap today, I promise. But I think we're almost at the time where we need to actually start giving scores and thoughts in terms of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons. Episode one, of course, the initial alliance actually there. We'll just mention Jeremy Wilkin, who was also involved with holding Cy Grant, we've spoken about. Sylvia Anderson herself played the voice of Melody Angel. And Liz Morgan was the name I couldn't quite remember from that point of view, with Lisa Shin as the voice of Harmony Angel. So ensuring that they all did some excellent work there, and indeed still sort of work on that premise. So let's see, first of all, if our silent audience member and team member can this week actually sort through her score. Eloise Sheehan, what is your score that you're going to actually hold up to the camera now, please?
Love the sex, not the narrative.
Exactly. Let's just see what we've actually got from Eloise. I'll just switch to gallery view in the system here. And Eloise, your score is? She might have to turn that upside down. Robin, can you translate that in terms of the way forward?
It's 7. I like the set, not the narrative.
Right. There we are. Okay. Excellent. Jessica, what are you going for?
I think it's a really solid 8. I think that I liked everything about it, and I also liked how all the characters having like color names reminds me of Clue. I think you call it Cluedo. I thought that was pretty cute.
Excellent. Okay, Jenny, your score?
Well, I'm sorry, but I have to give it a 10 because I absolutely love it. I just have to mention the fabulous uniforms, the attention to detail of everything, like all the little bits and pieces, and the special effects, very good, but quite simply done. I love this program. So
10. A 10 from Jenny. I think there are certain episodes which do warrant a 10. For this one, for me, this is 8.5 or 8.5. I'm going for that. Rebecca?
Yeah, I'd say an 8 as well. I think it was, as Robin said, ahead of its time. As Jenny said, attention to detail was brilliant, and I enjoyed it. So yeah, solid 8 for me as well.
Okay, and Robin, as the voice of the Mistrons emerges in its own way,
I'm going 9 on this one because it's so innovative and so well made.
Fantastic stuff. Next week in Resonance Rewind, we will finally rescue Penny Robinson. Angela Cartwright should be joining us on the programme as we actually work our way through the her favourite episode of Lost in Space, of course, My Friend, Mr. Nobody, will be featured on Resonance Rewind when hopefully Eloise might have sorted out her microphone challenges. Again, shrug of the shoulders there. We don't know. But for the moment, to Robin Pierce, to Eloise Sheehan, to Jenny Bill, to Jessica Burtis, and to Rebecca Bond, huge thanks. Spectrum is green. We haven't even mentioned the code signals. Spectrum is red, Spectrum is green, and so on. But I think it's fair to say SIG. Shall we all get together? Shall we all continue Resonance Rewinding? Let's say those three letters, SIG.
SIG.
Captain.
to the scene. Spectrum is green.